Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Behind the noisy debate over human-caused climate change, a debate that more politicians are having these days than scientists, the vast majority of scientists believe this is a settled question. There is another discussion, though. Do we use our ingenuity to adapt to the consequences of global warming or restrain global demand to try and reverse those consequences? Is one more practical than the other? Well, Manhattan Institute senior fellow Robert Bryce is an optimist, solidly in the adaptation camp. His book is called Smaller, Faster, Lighter, Denser, Cheaper, How Innovation Keeps Proving the Catastrophists Wrong. Bryce is anxious to generate some controversy and raise the noise level in what he calls the adapt or die debate.
We face a lot of challenges. There's no question. Fresh water supply being an obvious one. Overuse of pesticides, another one. Climate change, clearly. But look, there are plenty of reasons to be optimistic. And when we look at the trends in innovation towards smaller, faster, lighter, denser, cheaper, they're incredibly positive trends that I think will continue.
And two of those trends do not include solar panels and wind generators, in your view.
Well, let's look at solar. I have solar panels on the roof of my house. I'm bullish on solar. Look at the cost and declining cost of solar. It was $20 a watt in the 1980s. Today, it's less than a dollar a watt. It's very appropriate in many locations around the world, rural applications in particular. But look at the data. Look at the numbers. The reality is that solar and wind energy, for whatever their merits, they can't even meet growth in demand in global energy, much less displace significant quantities of hydrocarbons. The problem is basic physics and simple math. There's no conspiracy here against these sources. It's just that they take too much land, and we don't have a lot of spare land to put up massive arrays of wind turbines or to plant whole continents effectively in biofuels.
Of course, with nuclear, you got a land problem if something goes wrong, like in Fukushima. They got a few acres out of commission up there.
Of course. And again, I'm not diminishing that. And the costs at Fukushima are enormous. But why should we pursue nuclear? Why are we pursuing nuclear even after Fukushima? It's because of the incredibly high power density, where we're talking millions of watts per square meter inside the core of the reactor. Even if you look at plants like San Onofre in California, you're talking 2,000 watts per square meter of power density versus wind at 1 watt per square meter and biofuels at a fraction of a watt per square meter.
If we were only looking at energy demand, environmentalists say we can have our cake and eat it too if coal is developed in an unrestricted, maximalist kind of strategy. There is enough coal there to fuel virtually anything that we want to do, but at a huge environmental price. In this book, you really take directly on some of the tensions of developing coal, the temptation of developing coal, and some of the technological limitations. Where does coal come out in your debate?
If we just look at the numbers, John, and you look at the trends in coal consumption, since 1973, it's the fastest growing form of energy globally. Look at the last 10 years. Global coal consumption has equaled the growth in oil, natural gas, nuclear, and hydro combined. So when I looked at coal, I thought, man, this is difficult because it both confirms and beggars my thesis. It's not smaller. It's not faster. It's not lighter.
It's not denser.
It's not denser. But what we see is coal being used to generate electricity, and nothing is smaller, faster, or lighter than electrons. And therein is the issue that for countries that want to develop, they're going to use coal because they have to have electricity. The essentiality of electricity to modernity is incontrovertible. So the countries that are now developing, whether it's Vietnam, China, India, you name it, they're turning to coal first because it's the cheapest option.
But what's going to be the fix if there is unrestricted demand for coal and coal is developed all over the world? There are going to be environmental implications of that, that the faster, lighter, cheaper, denser economy is going to have to deal with fairly quickly.
There's no question. And what is clearly needed is better combustion technology that will restrict the amount of particulates and other pollutants that come out of the smokestack, because facts show that this is such a fast-growing form of energy because people are so desperate for electricity.
So a better investment than wind energy would be investing in cleaner coal, knowing that the demand is going to rise.
For the developing world, there's no question. But I think that in my view, I'm very bullish on end-to-end, natural gas to nuclear. If we're serious about climate change, if we really want to address the CO2 emissions issue, we should be pursuing natural gas and nuclear. We are in the United States. We have a huge surge in natural gas production. It's been a key reason why the U.S. has reduced its CO2 emissions more over the last few years than any other country in the world. Nuclear is problematic because of cost. It's problematic because of regulation globally. But there is a very positive trend, I think, in the nuclear space now where we're seeing venture capitalists go in there trying to develop safer, cheaper reactors. And I'm very hopeful for that.
Now, there's a lot of hopeful messages in this book, but are you concerned that people will take the simplistic view here and go, well, you know, we don't need to worry about climate change. We don't need to worry about some of these problems because here's this guy who's going to innovate us to the future, and we can use a book like this to really go after the environmentalists. And I'm sure there are plenty of media outlets who would be happy to do that.
Well, and I'm certain that's probably the case. But I think that, in my view, we've had too much attention, frankly, on climate models and not enough attention on fuel cell models, on engine models, on these ideas about how do we use energy more efficiently to produce the power that we need for any given application. Because that's where the gold is, I think, that as we try and bring more people out of darkness, truly darkness, into modernity, how do we do it most efficiently and therefore reduce their amount of CO2 emissions and other externalities?
What's the most controversial suggestion that you make in this book that you would love to be adopted tomorrow?
Well, I think it would be the need for cheap, abundant, reliable energy. What cheap energy allows is for an economy to develop. It's the wealthy countries that can protect the environment, by and large. I mean, you look at the poor countries anywhere in the world. Are they able to protect the environment? No, they're generally not. But cheap energy is the fundamental base for any modern society, so that if we can get cheap energy, we can get to better environmental protection, because the two go hand in hand, in my view.
Although some people will listen to what you're saying and say, all right, for the 21st century, then what you're advocating is a kind of an environmental colonialism where the rich countries will have breathable air and the developed countries will not, and will have to struggle along with these same technologies, and thereby will be the division of the world in the 21st century.
Well, I argue that point all day long. I don't think that's true at all. In India alone, you have 1 million people, mostly women and girls, dying from indoor air pollution. Why? Because they're using low-quality fuels. Why can't they use butane, propane? Why don't they have natural gas? Why don't they have modern energy sources? Because that means better indoor air standards, air quality for them that saves lives.
Robert Price is the author of Smaller, Faster, Lighter, Denser, Cheaper, How Innovation Keeps Proving the Catastrophists Wrong. Robert, thanks so much.
Thanks a million.
We're asking you, what are your energy-saving and energy-consuming habits?
This is Adriana from Dallas, Texas, and I have changed all the light bulbs in my house to be energy-efficient light bulbs. However, I also love my clothes dryer. I love to dry everything on high.
What would we do without clothes dryers? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE to tell us about your clothesline.
The Takeaway is supported by Lumosity.com, the brain training program designed by neuroscientists and used by 50 million people, created to improve memory and attention. More at Lumosity.com.